Hi everyone, it's Eli. You know how sometimes you stumble upon something truly game-changing in healthcare? Well, I found it. Kinetisense. This cutting-edge motion capture technology is transforming movement, assessment, and recovery. Imagine getting instant AI-driven insights without any wearables on your patient. That's right, no ping pong balls needed. Just pure, accurate data. Perfect for boosting athletic performance, pinpointing imbalances, and refining rehab. Top professionals worldwide trust Kinetisense to maximize productivity and results. Check out our partner page to learn more. Experience the revolution in movement. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More, the podcast that gives you a viewpoint in sports medicine that can't be found anywhere else. I'm your host, Eli Halleck, and we have a fantastic show ahead of us today. So let's get started. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. Today, we have a new guest, and we're always excited when we bring in new guests. We have Valerie Herzog, the Department Chair of Athletic Training at Weber State. How are you doing, Valerie?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we appreciate you coming in. I know we've been working on this for a while, since the beginning of summer, I think. I'm just excited we got to the point where we could connect.
Yeah, me too.
I am also happy to announce Victoria Chavez. Hi, Victoria. How are you today?
Doing great. How are you guys?
I almost believe that. Can you hear that? I almost believe it. Thank you so much. I'm doing good. It's a beautiful day in California. The winds aren't back. It's not raining. And all I see is blue skies. So it's a good day. How about you, Valerie? What's the weather like up there in Weber State area?
Yeah, Utah's nice. Winter arrived a few days ago. We got a little snow, but it's warmed up a little bit. So I went for a walk today. It was nice and sunny and high of 50. We call that a good day here in the winter.
High of 50. We were freezing our feet off last week, and we were at 52 degrees during the middle of a football game. We didn't know what to do.
I feel my toes.
In Utah, we're high altitude and abundant sunshine. So even when it's 52, it feels warm because the skies are blue and the sun is beating down on you. And so winter's not too bad here. It's nice.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Ogden. South of Salt Lake, correct?
North.
Darn it. I'm thinking of the wrong city then.
Yeah, we're about 45 minutes north. Orem is south of Salt Lake. Ogden is to the north.
That's the one I'm thinking of, Orem.
Yeah, Orem is where Utah Valley University is.
Okay, got it. Either way, I've got family up that way, and a lot of family goes to BYU games, and beautiful country. Absolutely love it. My wife and daughters and I used to spend at least 3 or 4 days there every winter for a dance company professional track that they did. It was so fun. But Oh my God, we got snowed in one time and had to drive back to Salt Lake. California man driving in the snow. No bueno. No bueno at all.
Yeah, we have students that come here from the Southeast, and I always have to tell them, yeah, I know in your town, you're used to if there's 6 inches of snow, they shut everything down for 2 days. But in Utah, if it says we're getting 2 feet, it means set your alarm a half an hour early. Don't turn it off because you're going to get up, dig out your car, and crawl to school because we're going to start on time and we're not canceling. I've been at Weber State 20 years, and I think they've canceled classes twice. And it's just really early in the morning, and they needed time to plow the parking lot. So
that was it. That's the only reason.
And you know we get a lot of snow here. So
I do.
We're not afraid of it. We have unlimited supply of salt, which helps with the Great Salt Lake.
That's true. Very true. That's funny. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you ended up at Weber State.
Sure. So actually kind of similar as you, I'll make that connection here in a minute. I did my undergraduate degree at Alderson Broaddus College, a small little private school in West Virginia that has since closed along with a lot of other private schools.
Yeah.
And then went out to Indiana for a bit and then doing an internship. And then I was a head athletic trainer at a private boarding school in Virginia called Virginia Episcopal School. So I was there for 2 years. I always tell my students that you don't appreciate how good you have it right now, because I had 27 teams. This is before cell phones. So I had a mountain bike, a backpack, and a walkie-talkie to the nurses. So if 911 needed to be called, I had to call the nurses on the walkie-talkie. And I had, just in the fall season alone, for example, I had varsity and JV football. I had two varsity and JV boys soccer, varsity and JV girls soccer, girls field hockey. You know, so a lot of high-risk sports all in one season. And I just couldn't, you know, that's hence the mountain bike. But it was a lot of fun. And then I went back to school. I went to UVA and got my master's degree. And then went out to University of Charleston back in West Virginia for about 5 years. And then I was in a split position. So I taught classes in the morning and then I covered sports in the afternoon. And after doing that for a while, I just found like, I mean, I loved it all, but I was getting a lot more joy and fulfillment from teaching. And just really found that was my calling. Went back and got my doctoral degree from Marshall in leadership studies and did a second master's as part of that in exercise physiology. And then I came out here to Weber and I've been here for 20 years and I just love it. So I primarily teach here, but we do help out occasionally. When I first started, I covered the men's basketball team a couple days a week, but you know, that just ended up even being more than I could handle. So now we fill in occasionally when needed. I take care of other faculty or staff occasionally, and the faculty will take turns being spotters at home football games. So that's kind of fun.
So you still keep your fingers a little bit dabbling around in the clinical side. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's fun. At one point I was taking care of our provost, you know, so that was kind of fun. They'd come to my office and I'd work on them, and that's, yeah, it's kind of fun.
Oh yeah, we know that. Everybody thinks athletic trainers, you only deal with athletes. No, anybody active. Victoria could nod and or chime in. We work on darn near anybody, don't we?
Yeah. Eli, just today you had a teacher come down and we worked on them getting his hearing aid out. So it's not just injuries, it's pretty much anything.
Yeah. Absolutely. Hearing aid got stuck in his ear.
Yeah, so, actually, one of the interesting things we've done recently is our nursing program reached out and wanted us to come in for their Doctor of Nursing Practice students and have the faculty teach orthopedics to them. So we did that. And at the beginning, the member said, can you introduce your profession so we can, you know, they can learn more about athletic trainers. And I explained that in a high school setting, we're often, particularly in Utah, but a lot of places, we may be the only healthcare that some of these kids have access to. And I said, so we see everything. They come to us with everything, anything going on with their body or their brain, they're coming, right?
So true, so true.
And she said, oh my gosh, we need to partner, because she was working on an initiative to get nurses back in the schools. And I said, we would love to have more nurses in the schools so we have a partner and we can share information, because we can't be there from 7 in the morning till 7 o'clock at night. It's too much. And so they don't have, you know, right now in Utah, a lot of the secretary in the principal's office is in charge of inhalers and EpiPens and, you know, glucose testing. And it's crazy because they don't have a nurse, you know, and we can't be there for 15 hours a day to do all that. I actually partnered with her on an initiative and wrote a letter of support from the ATs to say, you know, this would be a great part. Wouldn't it be great if we built an alliance with nurses across the country? You know,
oh my God, you're preaching to the choir right now. Oh my God, I love it. I love it. We've been talking about that for years in California, but we're missing one important thing in California. Licensure.
Right. But if you want to get licensure, you got to build allies, right? And the nursing group is a powerful group. So if we can support them in their efforts to get nurses back in schools, as a great ally for us to share information with, and the next time we go for legislation, maybe they'll support us, right? Because they'll see the value. They'll get it. They know
so true.
Are,
right? I love how you connected at the educational level. So they can come out knowing what an athletic trainer is, because everybody knows what a nurse is, but not everybody knows what we do. So we're educating at the same time. So when they get in that position, and hopefully they get that job at that high school, we become a healthcare team.
Right.
How fantastic would that be?
Even just last week we have, so our master students, we do a full semester of casting upper and lower extremity, and the DNP students don't get as much time because they're trying to cram in everything. And so once our students have mastered, they already do the upper extremity casting, but they don't teach lower. So for an interprofessional educational activity, The DNP students come over and we partner each one up with a master's student in athletic training, and our students teach their students how to apply a lower extremity cast while getting to know each other at the same time. So we are, it's great, you know, as faculty, we get to go teach their students in the classroom. We teach orthopedics, but then also our students teach their students one-on-one, and they leave and they say, wow, that was so great. You know, thank you so much. Because they really got one-on-one instruction for an hour and a half, and they gain an appreciation because they talk a lot about all the different things during that hour and a half. And I think it's a great way to build relationships and rapport.
That is fantastic. I'm a preceptor and have been at Cal State University Northridge in California. And that's one thing that has been pushed for a little while is the integration and teamwork of all the different healthcare professions on campus and trying to build a rapport, because let's face it, at a high school in California, we're fortunate many schools have a nurse. At our school where we're at, and one of the reasons we have a couple of us, we do all healthcare on campus. But like you said, 7 to 7. So we're fortunate we have a couple of us so we can split the time and try and stay sane, and two of us try and stay married, which is key. With that in mind, those schools that have an athletic trainer, as you know, we're at the game, we're interacting potentially paramedics, physicians, PAs,
yep.
NPs, MDs, EMTs, firemen that are EMTs, policemen that are EMTs. If they know what we do and we can work together as a team, oh my God, what a wonderful world this would be.
Yeah, we did an IPE activity with the paramedic program earlier this fall. So we taught them about cold water immersion and rectal thermometry. And we went out and I had already trained my students through all the labs. So then we met them out on the football field with 5 cold tubs and tarps. And we showed them the cold tub and the tarp method and, you know, how to support them in the tub. And we talked about why we do rectal thermometry and why we do cold water immersion. And most of the paramedic students were like, oh, we've never heard this before. We've never, and they were all licensed EMTs, but it was completely new to them. And they asked a lot of good questions. Well, why? And what about this? And what about that? And I said, no, we're always going to cool first and transport second, 100%. And it was really good. And one of our athletic trainers on football came out to watch for a little bit. And she said, oh, I'm so glad you do this. This is going to save those of us out in the field so much headache later, right? When they show up and they already get it. Yeah,
yep.
I mean, I know you go out and you do the timeout, but you know, if you're on a different page, it's really hard to get people completely on the same page in that 5-minute timeout before the game, right?
So true, so true. And then at the same time, I hate to say this, but in the heat of the moment, while something's going on, if say you're kind of on the same page, egos get in the way.
Exactly. Well, in protocols, right? So their protocols tell them they
yes.
have to do X, Y, Z, or they're liable. And our protocols are in conflict with their protocols. And so they don't want to be liable, but we're like, we don't want to be liable because we're bound to the NATA position statements. They're bound to their, they, it helps them understand. And their faculty were out there too, to be like, oh,
oh, even better. Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Right? We need to look at our protocols. We need to make sure that we're all on the same page, because if they learn it in the classroom and they practice it in lab, then they're going to do it. But if they've learned something different in the classroom, lab and certification, and then they come out and we tell them, hey, we're supposed to do it a completely different way, and they're like, I don't know if I trust you. Not because they don't trust athletic trainers, but because it wasn't part of their training, right? It wasn't.
It's different from what they know.
It's different than what they were told by their experts, right?
Totally.
It's been good. We do some IPE too with medical laboratory science students. We teach them stop the bleed training. We've done.
You said, so we have some people that don't know what all these abbreviations mean.
Oh.
So can you tell us?
Yeah, so medical laboratory science, in some places it's called clinical laboratory science. So they're the ones in the hospital that are doing blood draws and testing blood for different things. Any tissue or fluid you're getting out of the body, they're the ones putting it through machines or looking at it under microscopes to determine, you know, what disease process might be present, viruses or bacteria or whatever. They help teach our students how to do blood draws. The EMTs come in, teach our students. They're going to teach this spring how to do set an IV. And then we go over and we teach, also partner with the paramedics on spine boarding. So they kind of show us their best practice protocols, because they don't have 8 people. They have 2. right? So they have to do it differently than we do it. And then we teach them football equipment removal because they're not as familiar with that. So we really try to do a lot of IPE and hope
That
it'll
is
make
so awesome.
your lives better, those of you out practicing in the field, because you won't be butting heads with people with different protocols when they all come out together.
And Victoria can speak out of personal experience. I never butt heads with anyone, right, Victoria?
Eli, you get along with
Hey,
everyone.
hey, 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 be nice. I don't know what you're talking about. I am an easy, laid-back person. I have no idea what she's talking about now.
Yeah, so is a
Jeez.
chihuahua.
What are you saying? I'm a little bigger than a chihuahua. Wait a minute here. Jeez, I don't know about this. All those animal lovers out there are going to be upset. So I don't know about that. I'm more of a King Charles Cavalier Spaniel kind of guy. So we'll go with that.
There you go.
We'll go with that. That is so much good information, Valerie. I really love it. I love how you have taken the program and intertwined it with so many different medical professions so everybody can learn to play in the sandbox together. Because,
Exactly right. And at the end of the day, it's about the patient. Like you mentioned, if you're in an
oh my
emergency
God, yes.
situation and somebody needs immediate care, you don't want to waste time by arguing about how you should provide that care, right? Because ultimately, it's the patient who's going to suffer.
That's the only thing we care about at that moment in time. That young man, that young woman, that individual who is injured and needs our care. That's all we care about.
Right.
And I've seen it a few times where egos get in the way and they forget that. And that's never good.
Yep.
I am a huge fan of bringing all of these, people together and kind of getting an understanding of what we all do. But that's really kind of what that is, right? Just being able to understand what you do, how much work it takes, and that it is, at times difficult, rather than now they have that knowledge, now they can go perform said act, right?
No, well, I mean, there may be times where a paramedic might show up on the scene to treat somebody with exertional heat stroke, and there's no athletic trainer present. So they asked, what do we do in that situation? And I said, well, we can teach you how to insert a rectal thermometer, be happy to. And you can't fit a cold tub in your ambulance, but you can fit a tarp. So we show them the tarp method too. Because one thing I don't know if you're aware of, but OSHA is actually partnering with the NATA and the Corey Stringer Institute right now to develop heat treatment guidelines because they don't exist through OSHA. And there's all kinds of people who are out there working in physically active settings who can develop heat stroke. It could be a firefighter, could be a police officer out in full gear in a hot day, working some kind of street event. It could be a construction worker, people in hot factories. And OSHA currently has no heat stress guidelines, or really as far as how to treat somebody if they develop an exertional heat stroke. And in those settings, it's unlikely to find an athletic trainer. And so we want to make sure the paramedics, number one, know to do if we're not there, but also number two, if they are on site or come on site, we don't want them to yank them out of the cold water immersion tub after 5 minutes. We want them to work with us. And so I get it. Yeah. So yeah, let's pull it. Are they at 102 yet? Okay. When they're at 102, let's pull them out and package them and ship them, right? And we're all on the same page. And then when they get to the hospital, they can communicate more clearly with the emergency room. When this whole protocol first started, we had a patient that went down at our Ogden Marathon, and the team had just implemented new practices. So they measured his rectal temp. It was 108. They did full body cold water immersion, got him down to 102, packaged and took him to the emergency room. And the R was like, well, he doesn't have heat stroke. He's just fine. After an hour, they're ready to send him home. And our
Oh
physician,
my goodness.
yeah, and our
Oh my
physician on
goodness.
site had to really advocate on behalf and said, no, he was at 108. We need to do some blood chemistry and see what's going on. And they started doing blood chemistry and more analysis. And they were like, wow, yeah, we got his temperature down, but he was still really a mess for quite some time. And he ended up spending the night in the hospital. And had he sent him home, he might not have survived. And so having the paramedics on board and understanding that, because they're going to be the ones with him at the hospital who can then convey, this patient was at 108, make sure you do a thorough blood chemistry check, make sure you evaluate, instead of just saying, oh, it's not a heat stroke patient, they're at 101. So I do think I do see what you're saying. I don't want them to take over our jobs, but we can't be everywhere.
Yeah, no,
That's not
100%.
what our administration thinks. But yeah, wait, did I say
Eli.
that? Hold on, wait a minute.
I think a ghost
Let me
said
look
that. It's
around.
okay.
Somebody was that Joel said that, just in case any of our admin said it or listen to this. I think Joel Dorning, who's a contributor to this show quite often, Joel Dorning said that. So we'll just
We'd
let them
be
know.
happy to be everywhere if they would just hire more staff, right? Then we could be everywhere.
Well, hi, Victoria. That's how we
Hi,
got. That's why Victoria
guys.
is part of the staff now.
Yep.
So thank you, administration at St. Francis High School, for helping us get that third athletic trainer so we can take care of everything. Yes. You mentioned the OSHA thing, and we've been dealing with heat illness prevention guidance a lot in California right now. It was a big push, and you'll probably see both Victoria and I roll our eyes as we bring it up, because they threw a brand new guideline at us in July, took effect July 1st, and then kicked in. And they gave us the guidelines on July 17th, 18th. So we love that. You started on the 1st, but don't tell us what's going on till the 18th. Anyway, that's a different story and a different episode. That was a fun one. So I pulled up OSHA because I knew about the same time they were doing stuff in California with OSHA heat illness prevention, because they had it all over the news. And I see exactly what you're talking about. They have prevention standards, but
No
not
management.
really good treatment management stuff. So other than shade and get them in a cool area. I'm looking at this going, okay, well, that's just common sense, but what if they really need medical intervention? What do you do then?
Right. And who better to help develop these guidelines and train these other providers than the experts on managing heat stroke athletic trainers? So we can train paramedics. So when they come on a construction site, we can go to construction firms and we can train them about how to recognize and manage. We can go to firefighting companies and, in Utah, at least a lot of them are also paramedics. So we can train them as well. And what better way to get our name out there in the world and show professional advocacy than by putting ourselves out there as the experts who want to help save lives? That's such a great idea. And I think a lot of master's programs here should start doing that. Because I know in the summer, I mean, I just graduated, I think, May of 2023. And each summer we would do an emergency scenario. I think it was like 1 or 2 days. And one of them was working on the rectal thermometer, cold tub immersion, and doing it with the taco, and just kind of sending an invite to your local, paramedics, EMTs, and just putting it out there. Hey guys, if you want to join, this would be a great opportunity. And whether they take it the first try or not, just kind of starting to bridge that and lend out the hand.
Or even bring it to them. Hey, we'll come to you, or we'll come to your conference. I'm sure they have state conferences too, or regional area conferences. Hey, can we come and present on this? And
We're very fortunate at our location. We are actually maybe 200, would you say 300 yards away from our local fire department?
there you
And
go.
I know, I mean, I've been here just a couple of years. When I first started and wanted to make sure they knew what I was and who I was and what was going on over here, we took brownies over there. Said, "Hey guys, how you doing?" I mean, let's be honest. There's a certain way to healthcare providers and emergency medical people's heart, and that's through the stomach. And we took brownies and cookies over, said, "Hey, how you doing? My name's Eli Halleck. I'm the new athletic trainer down here." Athletic trainer. And I think one of them played football, so he kind of had a clue, but it was a great meeting and a great conversation. And a few weeks later, we had a worker fall out of a tree on our campus,
Wow.
literally. And at that point, they came over, "Hey, Eli," which made, just like you said, it made the event, which here we are on the side of a hill, spine boarding somebody and getting them off the hill and walking them down, because we're on a very odd hilly campus. And when I say hill, the angle's probably about, I'm looking at it right now from a distance, I would give it 60 degrees where that tree was, where he
Yeah.
fell. But everybody knew each other and we respected each other. Cookies and brownies go a long way sometimes.
We have our students, they used to go and help out with the dew tour, ski events, extreme sports, half pipe skiing and snowboarding, and they did a lot of practice of spine boarding on those slippery hills. And they say, athletic training spine boarding is easy, right? It's already on a perfectly flat, dry surface almost always.
Level.
Right. And you try to spine board on a hill or do extrication,
that's where the paramedics are really the experts. And so it'd be a great opportunity to say, hey, could we come in and you guys teach us some of your extrication efforts? Because sometimes athletes are on a hill, the cross country course, or you think of other places we might end up. Maybe the football team takes a hike up in the mountains or whatever. You might have to deal with extrication at some point. And then can we teach you cold water immersion and make it a partnership instead of just we're the experts and we want to get you up to speed? It's what can we teach each other?
The first time I ever came across that, we were talking with the lead physician for the American Motocross Association, and he was talking about the whoop-de-doos and somebody biting it. And the first time he had to do spine boarding with the patient, Trent Dellenberg, basically head down, feet up. And I paused, and this is just a few months ago. I paused and I thought about it. I'm like, oh my God, I've never had to do that in all my career. And then, just like you said, I started thinking, well, we've got a mountain bike team that could happen there. We have a cross country team and we all know what they run on. Oh my God, I'd never thought about it. We were fortunate on the man that fell out of the tree. Granted, he ended up being fine. It was a 15-foot fall, and we joke St. Francis, because of Catholic school, St. Francis helped him down. So when he landed, he was okay. But his head was above his feet. So it was a normal, almost a normal setup for spine boarding, but still. Oh my God. And on a slippery slope, that would
Oh,
be crazy.
with a patient who doesn't speak English. Sometimes tricky too, right? Because these extreme sporting events bring athletes from all over
International.
the world,
Very
right?
true.
Even if you have a few bilingual students, they tend to be, you can't speak every language in your team of seven, right? So yeah, they have a lot of challenges they get to deal with.
We're good, but we're not that good, right?
Yeah, and stuff can happen, and we probably, if you have gymnastics, you might have learned how to spine board in a gymnastics pit. It's totally different. I was a lifeguard. Spine boarding in the water is completely different.
Oh, yes.
So I think there's a lot of things we can teach each other and make it a good partnership and then walk away as we're all better prepared and better prepared to work together.
I don't know about you, Victoria. I am loving this episode. This is so fun to talk with you so far, Valerie. And it's just blowing by. I want to get to some other areas of your obvious expertise, but man, this is fun because I joke about it with guests and co-hosts every time. I'll create 15 to 20 questions. On a bad day, I use maybe five, and I haven't used one yet. And believe it or not, we're already halfway through. That's the crazy thing. We just blew through half an hour, and this has just
Wow.
been fun. I love it. Elevate your knowledge, ignite your curiosity, and compete with the best minds at events hosted by the American Academic Competition Institute. AACI's sports medicine competitions feature practical exercises, challenging quizzes, specialty tests, and keynote speakers that foster knowledge and social engagement in healthcare and sports medicine. Go to AACITest.org for more information on upcoming regional and national competitions. Sign up for the Ultimate Intellectual Showdown. Kind of going into a direction you've kind of brought up. You do a lot in advocacy for our field of athletic training, which, God, it's so important to be an advocate for our profession. And with that, you've really done a lot in District 7, and that's the Rocky Mountain.
Athletic Trainers Association.
Thank you. I didn't want to screw that up. It's a little different, I think, than ours. You are not the president, but the director.
Yeah, I'm the district director, so I represent our district on the National Athletic Trainers Association Board of Directors. I also sit on our district board, but kind of as a non-voting member, and then our district also has a separate president. Because I think they realized back in the day that running the district and serving on the NATA board was a lot for
Just a
one.
little bit. That's
We
a little
split
bit of
the
work.
duties. Yeah, so we split the duties.
Especially since it's a volunteer position and you got to do this thing called work to pay the bills. So
Yep.
yeah, I get that.
It's all fun, though. It's good stuff.
It's a blast. Now, with your experience at that type of position, and obviously you don't just start out there, you've kind of probably worked your way up through different positions in the Rocky Mountain Association. What do you see as some of the biggest challenges for athletic trainers in your district at this point?
I think there's a couple things we're working on legislatively, and it can be tricky because, when you go to the Capitol, you need one priority. And then when you have, somebody says, well, I've been working on this, and it's like, well, we got to focus over here if we want to get this, and prioritizing. And I would say right now we've got three big issues that are coming. One is the will be the compacts. And so that allows an athletic trainer, depending on how it's written, to make it easier for them to get licensed in other states. And for some of us, it doesn't matter. We're not leaving our state. But if you live near the border, if you work in one state and live in another, or if you travel a lot with professional teams, especially baseball, where you're in Arizona for a long period of time and you have to get licensure in other states, the compact agreements will make that easier. But once that's set up, each state will have to go in and kind of open their practice act to add language to participate in the compact. So that'll be one legislative issue. Another is California won't qualify, sorry, because you
I
guys
was
don't.
just going to say, what is a practice act? Victoria, you got any idea?
Know, that's foreign to me, Eli.
Very foreign. So foreign, it's we go a few hundred miles that way, it all of a sudden becomes an issue. Gosh darn it. But hey, we have title protection now. At
It's a
least we
start.
got some. It's a win. It's a win. That's how I discussed this at a conference just a month ago. It's a win. It's our first true big legislative win in a while. And as you said, it's a step towards our goal. So
Absolutely.
hopefully
Absolutely.
we get there in my career. I would love to
Yeah.
see it in my career.
Me too. We all would.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry.
No,
Please keep going on. What that's
sure.
a
So I
yeah,
think the other two big issue, in Utah in particular, we've been working towards third party reimbursements. So trying to have insurance companies recognize athletic trainers, and not just so we can make more money, but so patients have choices of healthcare providers and more access to affordable healthcare. And then the third thing, and kind of the hot topic right now, is dry needling, right? Everybody wants to be able to dry needle, and it's not in our scope of practice.
Yes.
But we were working on third party reimbursement for a while, and then somebody said, why can't we dry needle? Why aren't we going for that? And it's like, well, you can't really have two big, one or the other. And we had already been working on this one, and we kind of let it go for a while. So I don't know if they'll shift gears. They might go to dry needling. I think challenge in general across the district, and I think our profession as a whole, and you hit on it, Eli, earlier, is just that work-life balance and time commitment that's still a challenge for athletic trainers.
So true. Oh my
I
God,
think this
yes.
next generation, though, is speaking up. I think, 20 years ago, you wouldn't have had three ATs at a high school. That's amazing, and we've had a lot of turnover at our university, and when people have left, they've said, well, I can make more pay for less hours over here. And the NCAA actually reached out to the NATA and said, we used to get 100 applicants for every Division I AT position, and now we can't fill these positions. What's going on? And the NATA came back and said, there's a common theme that we've heard from all of our members. They want time, money, and respect. And you're gonna have to change the way things operate if you wanna be
Yep.
able to fill your positions with qualified people.
Preach,
And
preach, preach. Please keep going.
they've listened. When I was at University of Virginia, a big D1 program in the ACC, I think they had five or six staff, and now they have 14. And a lot of these schools have finally listened. And I think phasing out the GAs helped with that too, right? Because
Definitely huge.
they realized, oh, we're really depending on these GAs. And the coaches didn't really love it. I mean, I was a GA at UVA, and the coach said, it's great, but I get a new athletic trainer every year. And they would love to have a more long-term relationship with somebody, with an AT.
Totally.
It takes a while to get used to each other and work together well. And
Yep. And GAs were really just cheap labor, which is horrible to say. And you get that high turnover. One of my arguments about the GA thing, because you had a lot of colleges, I think it was North Carolina, had that big program for a while where they were sending GAs to the high school level and everybody was praising it. And I said, well, wait a minute. So they're going to flip every year or two and that school gets nothing. They have no person that gets to know the kids for 4 years, understands what's going on. And at the same time, they're devaluing our profession because you're throwing somebody in there for back then 18 grand. The school's paying nothing. Then when you have a full-time head athletic trainer that wants to come in and get a job and they're offering 23,000 a year, I could make that at McDonald's. Well, actually, in California, I'll make double that at McDonald's, but that's a different story.
No, I couldn't agree more. I think the only plus side of some of those foot in the door things, I know the boarding school I worked at, I met with the headmaster during my interview. That's what they call the principal. It's probably yours. They call yours a headmaster.
President. So,
President. Yeah,
yeah.
ours was the headmaster. So,
Tomato, tomato.
yeah. He said, you know, before we had an athletic trainer, I honestly didn't think we needed one. He said, but once we had one, I knew that we'd never be without one again. And so, based on that, I say, yeah, the GA model in a high school is not a great long-term solution. Just like with your title protection, sometimes it's a good foot in the door.
It's a step.
It's a step, but it shouldn't be the end goal by any means.
Totally, totally. And I know Victoria was smirking a little bit because, you know, sometimes it is that foot in the door that starts it. And that's how we were able to. And we are very fortunate here. We have three full-time dedicated athletic trainers. Two of us teach part-time. Majority of our job is clinical. As we have added hours and hours and hours, and I'm sure I'm going to say a word that you love, data. Data goes and it proves. And we were able to prove, look, here's what we've changed the first 10 years of my career. Here's what happened the last 10 with our second on. And now we're at a point where having two isn't enough. And Victoria's waving now. Hi, Victoria.
Hi
The
there.
data got her position
I was telling
because.
the kids, sign in, use that iPad, sign in. We need your numbers. That's
Because,
great.
and one thing at the high school level, so many of us don't do enough of is push data and show here's what we're doing, here's the value. And you said having the NCAA and the NATA discuss value and data and what's actually needed could just completely change our profession and our careers.
When I've seen it already, just in the last 5 years, I think when I started at Weber the 20 years ago, the starting salary for a new athletic trainer was about 30 to 35,000, right? Now the
Excuse
starting
me.
in Utah,
Oh my
right? Now
God.
the starting salary is 50 to 55 with moving allowances and sign-on bonuses. I mean, in my career, I'm in my 50s. I have never seen sign-on bonuses until a couple years ago. You know, there's a local hospital group, Intermountain Health, and they always had the best jobs, right? Because they put athletic trainers in high school full time, no clinic responsibilities, no teaching responsibilities, and everybody wanted to work for Intermountain. And those positions were like D1. You know, they had a ton of applicants and they'd fill it in an instant. They'd almost post them for 24 hours. A couple of years ago, Intermountain called us and said, hey, can we take your second year students out to dinner to try to recruit them? Like a huge shift, right? In a
Oh
whole.
my God, that's phenomenal.
So I think between opening up so many other employment settings and opportunities for athletic trainers to a little bit of a shortage we've had because people burned out, particularly
Yeah.
during the pandemic,
Oh yeah.
it's probably been one of the best things that's ever happened to our profession. I've seen salaries go up, you know, $10,000 in 5 years. And that's what
Yeah.
helped nurses, that's what helped teachers when there was
Yep.
a shortage. Not that, you know, we didn't do anything intentionally. None of the organizations did to create it, but here it is. Never waste a good crisis.
My wife has used that comment. I can't tell you how many times in the last 4 years. So, so true, so true. And I don't think Victoria's arguing because, again,
Nope, no
that's what
argument
got
here.
no argument at all. With everything that we've discussed so far, it's funny. I'm looking at my questions and you're just like pinging them off as we're talking. This is fantastic. I love it. I love it when our episodes go like this because it's educational. We've talked about so much that people in our profession might not usually talk about. It's so fun to maybe know that a listener later is going to hear something you say and go, that's a brilliant idea. Let me try and pull that to where I work. But that's also because you're a leader in the profession. So you look outside the box to bring it to reality. What advice would you give to an aspiring athletic trainer that wants to be a leader in the profession?
So I'd say first, don't give up. I know when I was first trying to get involved in committee service, I must have thrown my name in the hat 3 or 4 years in a row. Never got a call, never got a call. And I talked to other ATs who had similar experience and just gave up and walked away and said, I'm done. But it was important to me and I wanted to make a difference. And I just kept throwing my name in different hats until somebody said yes. And then once you get that opportunity, then show them how good you are. Be prepared for meetings, do the readings, read all the materials they send you before the meeting, contribute during the meetings. Then when you're asked to do stuff, get it done, do it well, and get it done on time. And then once people see, wow, you do good work, right? And you're a good colleague and you play nice in the sandbox, and then you start getting asked to do more and more things. And then, before you know it, your friend buys you a set of Post-its that says, please stop me before I volunteer again, because all of a sudden you're doing too much and you have to then pick and choose. Don't give up. And then once you get that opportunity, don't blow it.
Really shine, really shine. Let them know, right, Victoria? You know what that's like, right?
Oh, trust me, I know. Be the
one, be the person they want to be there. You're their go-to person, right? If there's something critical they need to get done well and in a timely manner, you want them to think of your name, right?
Yeah.
Every time.
I was looking on the website and it was talking about how you have a professional focus of manual therapy and therapeutic modalities. Huge fan. If you had a favorite, how you kind of go about choosing your, I don't know, style. Some ATs, I'm going to throw Eli under the bus since he just walked away. But I know he doesn't like cupping. He doesn't, not a huge fan. I know some ATs swear by cupping, others not so much. So, what's some advice on how to kind of set your practice and set your tone for the modalities and manual therapy? And then also, what's your go-to?
I think of a few things. Number one, I think we should always have a lot of tools in their toolbox. I think we see practitioners, and not just in AT, but in PT too, and they get really excited about something and then they want to use it on everybody for every condition. The same tool is not going to work on everybody for every condition. I really like iAStim or Graston tools, Graston instruments, and I do that quite a bit, but I combine it with PNF stretching. We do teach cupping in our program. I haven't learned that particularly myself, but it's on my to-do list for sure. I use a lot of joint mobilizations. The other piece of it too is how much time do you have?
Yeah.
Right. So the beauty of modalities, you remember those commercials, set it and forget it. There's different ways I can get swelling out of an ankle. I taught modalities this fall, and I say, I can ice you or heat you, and then I can sit there and massage your ankle. But if I'm at a high school and I've got 50 athletes to treat in a half an hour, I don't have time to do one-on-one massage. So hooking you up to a Normatec works a lot better, right? If I'm working with an Olympic team and I've got all the time in the world to work one-on-one with an athlete, maybe I'll do some massage, right? So I think you've got to have different tools in your toolbox to say, what do I have time to do? And then respecting different cultural preferences. Some people don't want your hands all over them, or you're working with minors. And there are issues with having your hands all over them in a private setting, right?
Oh,
You get yourself
yes.
into trouble and they tell stories. And, so there's a lot of consideration. So I always say the more tools you have in your toolkit, the better. And then you can find something that fits for that athlete, their preferences, your setting, and how much time you have. And also, if you try something on somebody and you say, how did that feel? And they're like, I think that made me worse, or I didn't like it. Say, okay, well, let's try something different next time. And if you only have one tool, right? If your only tool is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. You got to have a lot of tools in your toolbox.
Well, there are a few freshmen that look like nails every day at our place, so but we won't
Thank
discuss that right
you.
now. Come on. You can't argue with me, Victoria.
Not going to say anything.
Okay, there we go.
It is like cupping, for example. It's one nice thing. It doesn't take that long to put it on. You can walk away. Unless you do the sliding cupping, but
Yeah,
and it might work, it might not. But in a high school setting, if you're working on somebody's back, you got to take their shirt off to do that. And
Leaving marks on kids,
leaving
leaving
marks
marks
on
on
kids,
kids.
right?
I told her I
So,
was throwing you under the bus, Eli, that you don't like cupping.
yeah. So I'm just saying, like, it can be very setting specific, but maybe you have a parent that's really into it, or you get permission and fine, then you can do it. But I think you have to take all of those things into consideration when you're choosing a treatment plan.
Completely. And at the high school level, like you said, parental consent. Because they're minors, parental consent is huge. But man, you touched on one earlier that I really want to learn, dry needling. Just so intriguing. Such good data I've read on it. Just really, really intriguing. But again, needle into the back of a miner, the foot of a miner, wherever in a miner, yeah, better have some serious consent forms.
But I would pay attention to when you look at the research, don't look just at short-term research. We need to start looking at some of the long-term because I've had some ATs work with our PTs on campus and they've said, yeah, they get really good short-term results, but then it comes right back. And then it's almost like they feel like the tissue becomes dependent on regular needling in order to kind
Interesting.
of like chiropractic, right? Like you get your back cracked and you feel really good, but a couple of days later you need your back cracked again and you need your back cracked again. And unless you follow that up with other treatments and rehab,
The other tools.
right? So anything by itself may not, that's the other thing. You gotta, what's the package? What's the whole rehab plan?
Oh,
If
I
you
love
just,
that.
as a chiropractor, we had some in West Virginia that employed athletic trainers, and instead of just, I call it pop and ship, right? Crack your back and send you on your way. They would do the adjustment, the vertebral adjustment, but then they work with the athletic trainers on rehabilitation to strengthen and stretch the muscles to make sure they hold the spine in that healthy position long term. So you gotta put it all together.
Can't be a quick fix.
Right. Everybody wants a quick fix. And I think that's why they're excited about dry needling. Like it looks cool and it's a quick fix, but long term. And I don't think they have those studies. I don't think they've done those studies yet. So be interesting to see.
Yeah, I do like the idea of it being your toolbox, all of the modalities and stuff, because I look at it from the standpoint, this might just be me or, some other people too, but just because you don't like performing this tool on,
Cupping.
cupping does not mean that it should be removed from your toolbox because in a certain case, maybe that is what works for them in addition to other things. So never close yourself off to the toolbox,
Yes, ma'am.
Agree. Yeah, and even I think sometimes it's also the placebo effect we know is pretty powerful too. So if an athlete believes in a treatment, like ultrasound, if you ask an athlete after ultrasound, how did that feel? How did that help you? And they're like, I didn't do anything. I didn't feel anything. So if they can't feel it, they're less likely to believe it worked and it's less likely to actually work. And so if it's something they believe in, like maybe cupping is part of their culture, or they've seen somebody really cool, some famous athlete do it, and they really believe it's going to work because they're going to believe in it.
Yeah, I've
Boy, was that popular after the Olympics where Michael Phelps went nuts. Everybody's like, what's those bruise marks on the back? Those circle bruise marks. I'm like, oh God, no. I'll never forget that.
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar to K-taping. I know we went to a K-taping workshop, and everybody loves seeing everybody with colorful tape all over their body, and cool
Oh,
patterns.
yes.
And
Oh, yes.
I think the jury's still out on how much kinesio tape can actually do for somebody. But if it looks cool and they think it helps them, it probably does to some
Placebo
extent.
is a good thing. Yep. So true. So true. With all your experience in the collegiate setting and really being a professor, a teacher in an athletic training setting, you're more of a mentor. And how can we in our profession mentor future athletic trainers and support the next generation of our profession? What do you think would be the best way to do it?
I think what we heard from our advisory board, so we have a group of preceptors and physicians we get together with a couple times a year, and we say, you're hiring our grads, you work with them in the clinical setting. What are they missing? What could we do better as an education program? We often hear communication because this is the digital generation that's more comfortable texting their friends than talking to their friends sometimes. And so one of the really cool things that the Katie did with the new standards is requiring this immersion rotation, right? Where they're full time at their clinical site instead of classes in the morning and
Love
clinical.
it. I love it.
Yeah. And the whole purpose of that is to get at the other part of the job. Because, when you went to school and you went out to clinicals, you did the clinical skills. But then there was all this other stuff that the athletic trainer was doing behind the scenes that you probably didn't participate in, right? Communicating with physicians, taking athletes to the doctor, calling parents, filing insurance papers, arguing with coaches. And we kind of shield students from that. And so then they get on their first job and they don't know how to do it, or they haven't practiced it enough to be good
So
at it.
true.
And
So true. Yes.
so I think in the mentoring, we need to get them involved in this. We need to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to have this conversation with this coach or this parent, and I want you to come and stand by me and watch. And then we're going to talk about it after and kind of what would you have done in this situation? And then the next time you're going to do it, and I'm going to stand next to you, you know? And they need to talk to the athletic director. They need to talk to your disciplinary guy who walked down the hall, right? They need to learn the other part of the job, you know?
Very true. When I got back into the setting, because I went out of college, I went into a clinic, and getting back into the high school setting, being the person that talked to the parent, to the administrator, to the coach, it was like, oh my God, really? I got to do this. I got to do this. I got to do. I didn't realize. And that's
And
so true.
what do you do when you're out at football practice and they just scream at you and cuss at you in front of the team? You know, what do you do when I was at the boarding school and I had a kid with a displaced radius and ulnus fracture with about a 20, 30 degree bend at mid forearm, right? I mean, fractured
Ouch.
radius and ulna, displaced, and the kid looked down in it and dropped and he was going into shock. And again, I didn't have a cell phone, so I called the nurse on the walkie-talkie and I say, we need an ambulance. And she's like, for a broken arm, really? And I said, yes, please. And she's like, I'll decide. So she comes walking across campus,
Oh, boy.
10 to 15 minutes to get there. She took one look at him and was like, oh my gosh, you're so right. We need to call an ambulance. And then 10 to 15 minutes to walk back. You know, meanwhile, this poor kid's laying there for a half an hour
That poor
before we
kid.
even called for an ambulance. And, you know, I was not prepared to have those arguments. You know, I just wasn't prepared to fight hard enough. And I think learning how to fight in those situations, but in a professional way, is a skill we develop over time. But in the meantime, while we're learning, our patients suffer on the field, right? So
So true. Yeah.
the sooner they can learn that, the better.
What do you think, Victoria? Have we done an okay job training you on that part?
Yeah, 100%. I was actually thinking of a few instances where, as a grad student, I was able to see, you know, how you handle the parents who were pretty calm and the parents who had a little more to say. Also, when it came to coaches trying to demand you around of get there faster, or whether it was, you know, the opposite side, you know, their parents, that kind of opened it up of, nope, you got to stand your ground. You got to speak up. And I know as a student, you guys also gave me opportunities to kind of dabble here and there on it. And you guys were there to kind of walk me through it. Hey, that was good. Hey,
We
try
did it right. Yay.
this.
Do we
Yeah. Right. You guys are
did I get a B, B
awesome.
plus maybe?
Yeah. I
Yeah.
was like, did I do well? You guys, depends on how I'm feeling. Just kidding.
Depends on the day. Here you go. Got it.
That's
Got it.
awesome. Not everybody's doing that. So that's great that you guys are doing, you know, that's awesome.
Well, I think from coming from you though, hopefully some of our listeners will go, you know what? That's a great idea. That's something we really need to do. And the only reason I did it, and this sounds horrible, is it wasn't done for me, and I realized that didn't help me professionally. You really need to know how to handle yourself on the field, like you said, when a certain coach is yelling, cussing, screaming, throwing things, and trying to get his athlete back on the field, and you're between that injured player and the coach, and you are protecting your patient. That's all it is. You are protecting your patient.
Or a physician comes down out of the stands and says, I'll take over. And then you realize they have no idea what they're doing. And you're like, what kind of physician are you anyway? And they say, I'm a dermatologist. You're like,
Love that
okay,
one.
back
Oh
off.
yeah. Oh yeah. I love looking at them when they say that. So you're ready to assume all liability for this game. Because once you say yes, I get to leave and go home. You are in charge of everything. Boy, they go back in the stands real quick. I love that one.
Yep,
That's my favorite.
right. But you know, there's so many situations that happen repeatedly just like that, and we need to get them ready for it so they know what to do, you
So
know.
true.
And even the kind of the backdoor stuff. I mean, I had an athlete who had a talus fracture, volleyball, middle hitter, right? College athlete, sent her to an orthopedist, and they did the x-rays, and he said, yeah, you've got a stress fracture in your talus. Just 2 weeks. You can sit out for 2 weeks and you can go back. And
Huh?
right. And so I played a little game, and I've done this a couple times. I said, "Oh no, I called the office. You misunderstood." He said, "In 2 weeks you can start rehab. So we're going to start working out in the pool." And you know, the
I love it. I love it.
instructor, she went back in 2 weeks, and he's like, no, I meant you could go back to play." And since she ended up going back at 4 weeks, and needless to say, she displaced the fracture and had to have surgery. And you know, I was trying to do everything I could for her, but it's just, you know, sometimes people think that doctors know everything, and sometimes I disagree with their professional opinion. And how do you navigate that situation? It's tricky. It's happened more than once.
One thing that I noticed, Valerie, that you mentioned in your teaching philosophy, and I see it as we're talking here, really, you're a facilitator of learning. I think by taking that approach, whether it's in the classroom, out on the field doing a scenarios with paramedics, nurses, whatever, you are making our profession better. And I want to say thank you because as a facilitator, you're improving the knowledge of those people. You're not disseminating the information, cramming it down their throats and saying, this is how it's done. You're helping them learn in a real life situation. And that just doesn't happen enough. So I want to say thank you real quick.
Oh, well, thank you. We try. We are certainly trying. And I think most educators are definitely trying to move more this way. I think, you know, the CATE's been really good in pushing us, and you know, the NATA Executive Committee on Education pushes us, and we're trying to push ourselves too. But I think, you know, I think sometimes we think that educators and clinicians, right, we're in two different camps, but we're on the same team, right?
We
And we're all
really are.
we're trying to prepare your next staff member to make sure they're a good member of your staff. And again, all for the betterment of our patients, right? So they get the best health care they need, and move the profession forward so ATs don't burn out and they can be an athletic trainer and still have a life and want to stay in the profession.
That is the key because it's a lot different burnout at the age of, well, where I'm at versus the age of where Victoria's at. So it looks different, but it all ends up the same in the end.
Yeah. Well, we thank you. I mean, without preceptors, I don't know what we would do. I think our students would not be nearly as prepared. And it's so nice that they get so many different perspectives, right? A typical AT program has three faculty. We have five, but most have three, you know, so most students are getting three perspectives. But then they go out on their clinicals, right? And they might work with 10 different preceptors. So now they get 13 different perspectives. And that's so important. And they
Oh,
say, okay,
yes.
I know what the book told you, but here's how it works. And I've been able to share that too from some of my clinical experience. Yeah, I know this is how the book shows you how to do a Lachman's, but I have arthritis in my hands. And you know, you give me a 300-pound football player, I can't get my hand all the way around it. So here's how I do it with a big leg. And you pick up little tips along the way, right? And everybody's got their own way of doing things. So I think it's really great for them to work with all of you too. It
Thank
really,
you. Thank
yeah,
you.
makes
It's,
our
you know what? It's fun. It's fun. It really is. You're not going to believe this, but we're already at an hour and it goes by so quick. And this is so fun. I'd like to ask you one last question. And if Victoria has one, obviously I'm going to let her go first. Do you have any questions you want to ask, Victoria?
No, everything you've given has been very informative, and I've been sitting here trying to think of a question to ask you, but you've touched on a lot. Everything was in depth, and I'm super happy with it.
The only question I would like to pose, and this is simple. If you could look back at that individual you were so many years ago, thinking about getting into the profession and starting, what would you tell yourself back then that would be important to know? So, out of everything you've learned between your beginning to now, what's a piece of advice you'd throw back at yourself to say, hey, keep this in mind.
Never stop learning. You know, I think one of the things we tell our students is, you know, the best way to learn, I know it can be a lot, right? Memorizing all the special tests and all the anatomy and everything, especially when it's just so abstract when you're in class. But I say, you go out to your clinical and you see an injury, go home and read about it that night. Then it's going to stick. Right? You see your preceptor do a special test you're not as familiar with. Ask them what it's called. Go home and read about it, practice it. Then it's going to stick. You hear about something, I subscribe to like four or five different medical services, and I'm always learning about new stuff in the field. And just pick one thing a night to go home and read about, to give yourself 10 minutes. It's amazing. We've got some of our alumni work in the NBA, and they were in town. They work with the Sacramento Kings, Joe Noland, and got 10 tickets for our students. And I went down with them, and the Jazz ATs came over too. And I asked them the same thing. Give us some advice for students. And they said the exact same thing. Never stop learning. You can learn
Amen.
from anybody. You could, learn from the paramedics, learn from the registered dietitians, learn from the chiropractors, learn from the massage therapists. Just never stop learning. And you'd be the best AT you can be.
And when that happens, you take care of your patient.
Yep.
That's all that matters.
Yep. Got a bigger toolbox.
There you go. Back to the toolbox.
Toolbox.
Well, Valerie, this has been absolutely wonderful, inspirational. Great ideas and concepts, and hopefully, some of our listeners can really take away from this some good information. I truly enjoyed it. I'm so glad we finally got to sit down and have you on the show. So, thank you very much for being part of Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More today. Hope you have a wonderful day out in Utah. I hope everything stays beautiful for a while and enjoy your winter out there.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity. It was great to get to know you, Eli, and Victoria, too. It was so much fun.
A lot of fun. Thank you again.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Want to make sure you hear every episode? Remember to like, follow, and subscribe to our podcast. Don't forget to share our podcast with your colleagues, family, and friends. Your support will help more people find and enjoy our content. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is directed by Eli Hallett. It is produced by Gabriel Hallett. Our theme music is by Coma Studios via Pixabay. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the contributors. Want to know more about us? Visit us at wrapituppodcast.com. That's with one P, wrapituppodcast.com. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is a production of Hallett Consulting, LLC.